Tough love. A lot of tough love. Those are the two words for the program today. Lance Skinner Show out of Detroit Motor City. All eyes on Detroit today with the announcement by President Obama of what's being described as the tough love plan, the you've got 60 days plan to get your act together, or an entire state and region will be crushed. How's that? If you really want to sum it up quickly, a lot of mixed messages in this statement that by President Bush, or President Obama. Maybe I'm showing my Detroit colors here. That is being digested by a lot of analysts here in Detroit across the country. So we thought, since this show is based out of Detroit, the Nancy Skinner Show, that we would employ the finest resources in the home city of Detroit and the state of Michigan to help figure out what's going on. 866-991-9927, the number as usual to the program. Let's dig right in here because I know we have a limited amount of time. Mark Phelan is our fantastic reporter, auto critic at the Detroit Free Press, and has been covering this whole saga from for years. I guess it's sort of culminating today with this announcement, but years and years and years in the making. Mark Phelan joins us now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Nancy.
Okay, so first of all, as I said, we talked on the way here. Lots of mixed messages here, but sum it up, if you will. What did you hear the president say today?
The president said that General Motors is on the right track, won't be allowed to fail, needs to make some more changes, and Chrysler can't make it on its own. If they don't put together a deal with Fiat within 30 days, the government pulls the plug on the company.
For Chrysler. Okay, so let's go one at a time. So GM, they had their viability plans that were to be submitted today, right? So
yes,
they had been submitted early?
They were submitted earlier. The government went over them, said that they're not enough. GM has got the vehicles and the resources in the pipeline to be viable, small fuel efficient vehicles engineered in other parts of the world, because GM is a global company. But the numbers didn't add up sufficiently for the government, so they're giving GM a loan and 60 days to get the numbers shaped up correctly, and the expectation on most people's part is that the missing piece is the bondholders.
Okay.
Who own GM's debt, and they who have not been willing to renegotiate the debt when the union and, you know, all the other parties have come to the table.
So why is that? I mean, certainly the bondholders have a lot to lose as well. I mean, if this goes down, their investment goes down. Why have they been? What is the position, if you will, the leverage that they have, where they feel that they've been so recalcitrant?
Brinksmanship is the only thing that occurs to me, that they have been willing to dig in and say, we don't think we're going to have to sacrifice like all of the other stakeholders. And with the firing of Rick Wagner and the statement today that you've got 60 days to get it right, and the very calculated language about something like bankruptcy, I think the president was telling the bondholders, you know, make a deal now, or I will put in place conditions where you don't get anything back out of this debt.
Yeah, what really struck me about the seriousness of that threat was when he said, and for those people who will be affected, like Katrina, it's like earthquake or hurricane to this region, it would be, given the magnitude of both those companies and on the economy here.
And it would have effects across the country with the companies that supply them and the dealerships that sell them and places that service them. I mean, it's hard to underestimate, hard to overestimate the gravity of the situation.
Right. So even if, let's say, the bondholders now get serious and say, okay, we know we're going to get, two-thirds of, isn't that what everyone had to take, a two-thirds cut in the overall debt position of?
That was the number that the government put forward in the first place, and I haven't seen any new ones, so that's what I'm assuming.
And the bondholders just didn't go there. They were the holdouts.
Yes.
Okay, so let's say we had our come-to-Jesus moment, and they do it. 60 days is not a lot of time. What is required? What are you reading further into these statements? What does 60 days buy you? Because certainly, you're not going to be retooling any factories by then. You are submitting a new set of plans with everybody in agreement as to the go forward in 60 days?
That's it exactly. And the reality of it is that it's the global economic crisis that has taken General Motors down to this level. And as long as those conditions remain in effect, GM's going to be in trouble. And it takes time to put a new car on the road, even one that's developed. So it'll be at least a year before, almost exactly a year before, first of the small fuel-efficient vehicles that are coming roll out of the GM factory. So there is no quick fix. There is only the assurance that the things are done so that the companies don't come back in the future and ask for more.
Well, you just said that it's the global economy. The cars aren't selling. And so how do you achieve viability in that market where you can't, they're not selling and the credit's not available? How do you even achieve viability in that scenario? How is the Obama task force anticipating it will be dealt with that way? If we do what they want, expect in terms of fuel efficiency, will they hang with the company until sales pick up? That's the big question, right?
Yes, that is the big question, and I believe that they made it clear in the statements and the documents that they filed today that GM won't be allowed to fail, because GM has done the work to prepare itself for high fuel economy, all of the other things that are needed. They're not going to let GM be collateral damage to the economic meltdown.
And then Chrysler, that's a different story. Looks like Chrysler, either they go get married or you're getting kicked out of your house. Go get married.
Absolutely.
Or you're out of here.
The sheriff's at the door, the rent's overdue. Yes.
And Chrysler, how close were they to the Fiat deal? I mean, they've been dancing around this thing for quite a while, haven't they?
They are. It is pretty much agreed to. The big question for me is not whether they do the deal, because both Chrysler and Fiat understand that's in their best interest. It gives Chrysler access to technology for small fuel-efficient cars. It gets Fiat back into the North American market. So everybody wins. The question for me is, again, a question of timing. None of the cars that will come from this program are going to be on the road until the middle of 2011. How does Chrysler make it from today to then? Because they are, losing sales at a faster rate than General Motors.
Mm-hmm. So the president mentioned quickly, because I know you got to run, Mark. The president mentioned incentives to get those cars selling again, and to me it was somewhat underwhelming to be able to write off your sales tax. Wow, that's going to drive me racing to a car dealership.
It's not going to change the world.
Yeah.
The other half of the package could have a pretty significant effect. It's an incentive of up to $7,500 or so, people are talking about, for anyone who trades in an old car and builds a new one. It's a tactic that's been used in Europe, and in fact Germany is using it right now to fight the slowdown. Last month, when the rest of Europe's auto sales were off about 30%, Germany's sales actually were up almost 20%. So the idea is, if you've got an 8-10-year-old car that's unreliable, puts out a lot of emissions, uses too much fuel, we'll give you something between, you know, $4,000 and $7,500 to trade it in and buy a new fuel.
It's brilliant, but the cash for clunkers, we talked about that. It was sabotaged by Corker and Shelby and the boys down south who would rather have their Japanese auto suppliers come out ahead, right?
They are not fans of the Detroit automakers for a lot of reasons. This plan might not be as offensive to them because it doesn't matter whether you're buying a Honda Accord that's built in Ohio or a Chevy Malibu that's built in Kansas.
Oh.
You still qualify for the incentive.
Hmm. All right. Well, lots of details here. Certainly, quite the different treatment that we've seen with AIG getting bonuses because of their... because of that, the fiduciary contractual relationships, but all these contracts just
Wagner.
Went poof.
Yeah, ask Rick Wagner, the former CEO of General Motors, about that.
About contracts, about the sanctity of his contract.
and about, you know, executives being forced to take a hit.
Take a haircut, big haircut.
Rick was the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah. Huh. Well, hey, Mark Phelan, we appreciate you putting this in perspective. We'll be digesting all these details throughout the show and throughout, I'm sure, the weeks to come. And for the next 60 days, keep our fingers crossed.
Absolutely.
All right, Mark Phelan from the Detroit Free Press, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Nancy.
You bet. Now, Mark's going to be a busy guy. I've been on the phone myself all day trying to figure out exactly what this means, and we're going to relate it to you. A lot of aspects to this story. There's the disparate treatment here with the players on Wall Street. I don't know. You know, I've been out there for a long time talking about this, so Vicki be warned. I'll tell you what the feeling is. That's what, when we come back, I just want to tell you what the feeling in Detroit is. Let's start with that. Yes, there's news, there's analysis, but the human factor is bizarre. And so when we come back, we'll be talking about that. 866-991-9927. 866-991-9927. How are you receiving President Obama's news, the tough love plan for the auto industry, GM and Chrysler, I should say. We haven't even touched on Ford yet. A lot at stake. A clock is ticking. Let's put it that way. Can it be done? The nation is going to be impacted. We'll be talking about it on the Nancy Skinner Show. Wow, tough love. Serious work to do here in Detroit, the Motor City, RE, the auto industry. President Obama had an hour-long conference call with lawmakers from auto states and across the country trying to get buy-in from a bipartisan group on how to proceed. Essentially, a restructure of GM. Chrysler's kind of on their own. 30 days. GM, 60 days. Tough concessions to be made. President Obama says he does see a future for the U.S. auto industry that will finally advance to meet the goals that he and others have been talking about for years. Can we do it in 60 days? That's the question. I have lots and lots and lots of thoughts on this subject, as you would imagine. 866-991-9927. Before I dig into my reading of all this and if it's doable and the history of all of this, let's go out to San Diego and get Jack up first. Jack wants to jump in right away. Hi, Jack.
Nancy?
Yes, it's Nancy. Hi, Jack.
I did see you on Bulls and Bears, and I can say that you're way too attractive for radio.
Well, thank you very much. How did I do on Bulls and Bears?
I thought you held your own.
It's five against one.
Yeah, that's something new they're trying. They're bringing in the liberal.
So, well, thank you. I'm glad I think held my own. When you have five people against you, that I'll take that as a compliment.
Well, I'm troubled by what Obama proposed today on a couple of levels. One, I definitely see a double standard when you compare, say, General Motors to AIG. And what are we throwing, about $180 billion at AIG? Myself, personally, I see 10 times the systemic risk with the autos than I do with AIG. And
you second, see, you see more risk with the automakers? Oh, systemic risk in terms of if they fail. Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, because it turns out that the really what they were doing with AIG was saving the counterparties who were foreign banks, sovereign wealth funds, and hedge funds. They were paying off the bets that they made, and they were getting 100 cents on the dollar. And they're trying to tell us, oh, they're saving the taxpayer. That really wasn't the case with AIG. And there's really, you know, they're losing about $500,000 a minute at AIG. But I see
the
a
question,
lot of
if
jobs.
You want to, if you really wanted to parse that up and figure out, you know, which statement's true, this is the analysis you'd have to do, Jack. You would have to figure out the systemic risk of AIG would be the insurance companies that what sort of pensions and 401k plans were invested by those insurance giants that would have affected so many people versus take the number of if the autos go down, which just seems a lot more plausible suddenly than how many people are affected. One number that I talk about a lot is that many have studied at U of M is that 80% of our economy is of our GDP is consumer spending, and fully 20% of that is somehow related, not just directly from autos and suppliers and dealers, but from advertising. Like, see, that's what people aren't thinking about. You know why these newspapers are folding across the country and why radio stations are folding? Because the autos aren't advertising anymore.
All right. Now, let's move on to the second part that I'm
talking
about.
All right. Now, Jack, hold on, because now I'm up against my break. Can you hold on? Because I want to get to your second part.
Sure.
Okay. Jack, we'll hold on. We'll get to all these aspects. It's 866-991-9927. If you think you're untouched by this, if you are in radio, if you are have anything to do with any product that requires advertising, newspapers, anything, you are touched by this. So you might not know it now, but you're going to. Listen up. 866-991-9927. What did you think of the Obama plan? Can it be done? We're going to talk about all these things today, of course, on The Nancy Skinner Show. Jump right in here. Lots of news going on today with the announcement by President Obama of the Tough Love Plan for the auto industry. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. Talking about this all the time lately, by the way. Have been for many, many years. 866-991-9927. And timing is often is so strange, is it not, in life? I had already arranged. I saw that Bill McKibben was coming to town some time ago, and I said, oh, let's see if we can get Bill McKibben. My goodness, are you kidding me? He's going to be in our own backyard. Bill McKibben has been an environmental hero of mine for many, many years. He has been a researcher, writer, educator. He's written many books on environmental issues, and he's going to be speaking tonight in our hometown of Grosse Pointe here, the War Memorial at Yeah, you'll be here on April 9th. That's right, at 7:30. So Bill was coming to town to do a talk, and he was calling in today. Here's what his talk is entitled, The Most Important Number in the World, Saving the Planet and Maybe Even the Auto Industry. And how weird is it today that, of all days, the president announced a very tough love plan, let's say, for greening the auto industry and doing a quick restructure and turnaround. So Bill McKibben is, I'm very happy to have Bill McKibben on the show. Hi, Bill. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Nancy. Good to be with you.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny because you and I have been out there and speaking out on these issues for many, many years. And I find it strange that the industry put off resistance to calls to kind of green their technology, even though other nations were doing it and working with, had alliances with the government to do it. It's they were their own worst enemy for years and years and years. But somehow you just felt, had this feeling that, that they would find, you know, the price of gas went up to $4 a gallon, that they would find some sense and make a turnaround and that the story would end up well. But it's not looking like that, you know, that movie in my head. It's not happening, Bill.
Well, I'm afraid it's one of those cases of, you know, the where we learn the difference between short-term thinking and long-term thinking. I think that there actually were a lot of executives in Detroit who knew what needed to be done. Bill Ford Jr. certainly was talking a good game 5 or 6 years ago and starting to do some of the right things. But it was always easier to keep raking in the huge SUV profits for another year and putting off the day of reckoning a little further. And everyone participated.
Whose fault is that?
Republican, union, executive, you know, you name it. So now the kind of perfect storm of, you know, high gas prices in the last summer and then the recession that followed and, you know, the most of all, the kind of steadily dawning realization that global warming is entirely real and that it's going to be the single biggest policy driver for the next 40 or 50 years. I mean, all these things are combining to make it clear what folly that short-term thinking was, as short-term thinking almost always is. And, you know, one only hopes that with Obama's help, someone will figure out some way to dig out of this hole. But it must be said that it's a hole of their own making.
Yeah, it is. You're right. But Bill Ford, I remember he had a candid interview about that because he gets it. I think he gets that they needed to have cars that were sustainable. And he said it's the bureaucracy here, that it's so big. You got an institution like this. It's so big. You just can't turn it around overnight.
We better hope that that's, I mean, it's clearly true. And we've got to hope that somehow Obama is going to manage to turn around the even bigger bureaucracy that he's having to deal with almost overnight.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a lot of things that, frankly, that have gotten very large, too big to fail, turns out to mean too big, just too big, period.
Well, as it relates to the auto industry, I wrote, in fact, an op-ed piece that was published in the Detroit Free Press called Yes, Detroit Can Make a Green Turnaround on November 20th of last year. And basically I said, it's hard to get your head around this, but basically we should have, the government should set up a almost a forced restructure with the ability to, you know, force concessions from all these players. And take the best technology of each, because I think, you know, it's sort of a gamble. Plug in hybrids, you got fuel cell vehicles here, you've got, you know, all these little different technologies. Figure out where each of these companies really are at regarding those technologies and start to collaborate where it makes sense. Units like the, you know, Hummers got to go away. You know, that's just not, it's not going to work. But that would be something that would happen over 6 months.
Here's the thing. I mean, look, part of our problem is that we still don't have the market forces in place that would really drive this change the way that it needs to be driven. We've all known for a long time that the only way we're going to deal with our environmental problems and with the fact that we're starting to run short of oil is by making fossil fuel more expensive than it is now, by making its price reflect the incredible level of damage, economic and ecological, that it's doing to the environment. That's what all these sort of cap and trade programs, that's what they all come down to in the end.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, when there's finally a real tough signal, and everybody in Detroit and everybody in the coal industry and everybody at the electric utilities know that it's going to last, that signal, for another 40 or 50 years, that it's going to dominate their economic lifetimes, okay? That's the moment at which everyone will finally really have their attention concentrated. And they'll have their attention concentrated by market forces. I don't think anybody, Obama included, wants Washington to really be running the car companies for very long. and, you know, making all these decisions. You know, it would be hard to make them much worse than Detroit's been making them, but still, you know, he's got other things to do. And so what we really need to get in place from our political leaders is a strong price signal about carbon, one that sends the message that the next 50 years of the auto industry are going to be different than the last 50 years. Once that happens, I have enough faith in market mechanisms that they will actually be able to do a good deal of this fairly quickly.
Yeah, that's where I started. I helped start the Chicago Climate Exchange with Richard Sander out there trying to get the power. I'm a finance major, always an environmentalist, and people thought that was a strange combination. No, it's when the businesses get really, when they see green and being green, then it'll happen. But it hasn't happened, and we're very close with President Obama's cap and trade program. He's trying to make this case with the, it has to be part of the whole package of our fiscal recovery bill. Yet we have a couple of conservative Democrats, Evan Bayh and these others, saying we can't do cap and trade. This is another tax scheme, and we can't, you know, that's what the Republicans will say. But even the conservative Democrats are saying we just can't spend that money. It's the most foolhardy argument I've ever heard. How do you push back against
this? I think the only way to push back is the argument that we're not going to be able to have a carbon tax is going to be a politically winning argument, okay? But there is a good plan out there, and it's the one that Obama and his people are heading towards. And here's how it works. It's called cap and dividend, okay?
Okay.
We cap the amount of carbon that can go into the atmosphere each year. Scientists tell us how much it can take, which isn't very much more, it must be said. That cap puts a price on carbon. Exxon and whoever else has to pay for the permit to release that carbon into the atmosphere. And that would generate a lot of money. Those conservative estimates, $300 billion a year, something like that. So now you got this pot of money sitting around. What do you do with it? Well, one option is give it to Congress and let them spend it, okay? That strikes me as A, not a politically winning idea,
right.
And B, probably not even that good an idea. Congress isn't very good at figuring this stuff out. Congress spent the last 20 years enabling Detroit to get away with never raising the fuel efficiency standards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Congress spent the last 5 or 6 years underwriting corn-based ethanol. You know, one poor idea after another. So more sensible would be to take that $300 billion and just write everybody in the country a check every year for their share of the sky, as
like they do in Alaska.
Like they do, like Sarah Palin does. Sarah Palin, who comes closest to being our sort of socialist governor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody shares in the profits from their oil wells. Everyone should share in the ownership of the sky instead of just handing it over to Exxon and Peabody Coal and Duke Energy and whoever else.
Right.
So that cap and dividend plan has some political legs, I think. And
Has the administration talked about it?
Yes, it has. And in essence, Obama has embraced it. I mean, the negotiations are still very much underway, and the devil is always, particularly in things like this, big in the details. But it looks like at least a very significant percentage of the revenue generated by any cap will be coming back to people in the form of a dividend. And frankly,
but how does that work with the exchange? I understand markets and how the Chicago Climate Exchange works.
Well, you can then, I mean, it's a separate question whether you can then trade your pollution permits and things back and forth between companies. That strikes me as secondary to the real task of getting the strong price signal out to people.
Mm-hmm.
So under this cap and dividend thing, you'd be paying $4 a gallon at the gas pump, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be made whole, more or less, by this check you were getting every year or every 6 months, whatever it was, from the government. It wouldn't be bankrupting people. It would even be mildly progressive, since rich people spend a lot more money on energy than poor people. So, you know, it's by no means a perfect plan, but there are no perfect plans. We're in a very tough situation. We have to very quickly, you know, and this is the reason that things like what Evan Bayh said are so ludicrous. It's not as if, you know, physics and chemistry are going to patiently wait for us to solve our our economic problems so that we can get around to working on our environmental ones.
Right. They're going to make it much worse as the extreme weather events add costs, add the ocean temperatures heat up, so we have more Category 5 hurricanes. That's billions and billions, and then look at the military across the world, the political unrest that will result, that we will be responsible for.
Exactly right. You put it extremely well.
Now, listen, do you have to run, or can you stay with us on the auto? I just wanted to...
I can stay with you for another... about 10 minutes here.
Great. Awesome. We've got Bill McKibben on the line. He's coming to town. Bill is a great author. Deep Economy. Is that The Wealth of Communities? Is that the newest?
That's really the last book, yep.
The last book in a long series of books. A lot of people ask me how I got my edumacation on sustainable development, and Bill was responsible, I got to say, for a big part of that. So I'm really thrilled to have you on the show today and to be talking about... maybe getting closer to solving those problems, we should say. Who knows? Lord only knows. Maybe this crisis before us, as I always say, is an opportunity. Al Gore always says it too. Same character, crisis and opportunity, right? Maybe the crisis before GM is what it will really take for them to salvage, harvest the Volt technology and the other technologies that exist and turn them around real quick. Yeah, we should be so lucky. 866-991-9927, the number to the program. If you want to jump in here, too, and speak with Bill McKibben, here's your chance to do it on the Nancy Skinner Show. Okay, so if you want to get up to speed on all things environmental, just get the reader, Bill McKibben Reader. I see on Bill's website is on sale now, a collection of 44 essays written for various publications over the last 25 years. Issues like global warming, environments, environmental activism. Bill McKibben has written and lectured on it all for many, many years. So, and he's with us now. Isn't that great? On the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. So, Bill, you're talking about the main thing with all of the, you know, this long drive toward having a more sustainable environment is it's all price signals. And I agree with you on that completely. But what about, you know, the coordination? There's two questions. What about the coordination with the rest of the world? You know, one, we just had this Earth Hour thing. By all accounts, seemed like a good symbolic gesture. China and India participated. But... this is really an international thing, and there's almost a pushback right now. There's protests that will be meeting President Obama as he attends NATO and G20 summit meetings. One, who's in charge there? Is a new president a new day for us on international efforts?
Well, yeah, sort of. At least we're going to re-engage with the rest of the world and talk to them again, and that's a start. On climate and global warming, most of all, this is extraordinarily difficult. We have to solve it globally to really do anything. We do have a big opportunity this year. The world's nations are meeting in Copenhagen in Denmark in December to draw up a new global treaty on climate change. If it's a good one, you know, that would make some real progress. At the moment, it's not a very good. The drafts and things aren't very good, aren't very strong. So we've been running a real large global grassroots campaign.
Okay.
Called 350.org, 350.org. The number, which is arcane, is the number amount in parts per million carbon dioxide that the scientists tell us now is the most we can safely have in the atmosphere. It's a figure that comes from NASA, our space agency.
And where are we now? 260?
We're at 387.
Oh, my goodness.
And going up. That's why the Arctic is melting, you know, on and on and on. So we need a real strong agreement out of Copenhagen, one that really starts to put this, you know, starts to do for the global climate what we should have done for the auto industry 20 years ago. start taking account of the things we can see coming at us and doing something about them instead of just waiting for them to happen.
To collapse. And yeah. You know what? That's a great analogy, Bill, because the politicians always lead, or they lag behind the people, always. And, you know, we saw that with the war in Iraq, whatnot, the polls. I mean, it's just we need people to really get involved. Everyone's sitting back. They've elected Obama now in a Democratic Congress. They think things are going to happen across the world. That's just not the case.
That's right. It is true that having Obama in office gives one some room to work on these things. I mean, it was almost pointless to do it before because it was clear that, you know, Dick Cheney wasn't going to pay any attention. And so now we have possibility, but that means we've got to work very, very hard to make that possibility real. And that's what now is going to start happening, we hope. That's why we're organizing a huge day of global action at 350.org. That'll be in October, on October 24th. We're going to have rallies and things all around the world, thousands of them, trying to take this most important number and really drive it into people's heads before these negotiations in Copenhagen. Try to set the psychological bar, as it were, for those negotiations.
I believe in that, too. And if everyone gets involved and the pressure is on, then on all of these leaders, these world leaders, then people can be more powerful than those that represent them.
Well, let's hope so.
The alternative
is no sure thing, I got to say.
The alternative is bleak indeed.
That's correct.
Past 350, like a lot of people, I try to explain this when I talk about global warming. The difference between an ice age and now was 3 to 5 degrees.
Yep.
So that's interesting. It's 350. Those numbers come up again. You will be in town. I'm going to definitely come see you then in person. Bill McKibben will be at the Grosse Pointe War Memorial. The Grosse Pointe Library is promoting this. This is April 9th at 7:30 to give a talk about this. A lot of auto people, I'm sure, will want to hear what you have to say as well, Bill, when you're in town, so I'll come up and shake your hand.
All right, great.
Thanks. Good luck. 350.org is the website, folks, okay? So this is not just an interview you listen to. Get involved. Bill McKibben, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. That's great. Now, I have read his work, and my library is extensive, and he's populated my mind on this for he and many other great writers and authors. So it was great to have him on, and what a day to have him on. All right, more of your calls. Hang on. If you're on the line, we're going to be talking auto stuff, obviously. 866-991-9927 on The Nancy Skinner Show. Jump right in here, folks. Lots going on today here with differing headlines, actually, on the Nancy Skinner Show. White House questions viability of GM Chrysler. President Barack Obama refused further long-term federal bailouts for GM and Chrysler, saying more concessions were needed from unions, creditors, and others before they could be approved. He raised the possibility Monday of controlled bankruptcy for one or both of the beleaguered auto giants. Lot going on in that statement in terms of what was said. I think a lot of different audiences, those messages were intended to. He did raise the specter of bankruptcy. If anyone watched my show on, what was it, on Bulls and Bears on Fox News this weekend, where it was 5-1, they were talking about how easy, what the only way to deal with this is in a pre-pack, these guys pre-pack bankruptcy. And that's the way to deal with it. Robert Gibbs is getting a lot of muck about the double standard, with Rick Wagner being let go, essentially, and concessions being forced upon the auto industries in ways that Wall Street has no idea. They're getting their bonuses, and their CEOs are fine. But there's just a lot of messages going on. Before we get back to your calls, 866-991-9927, Verge Bonero, we got our guests are coming and going so fast. Verge Bonero is the mayor of Lansing, Michigan. I've seen Verge on TV already today. I knew that you would have a reaction, Mr. Mayor of Lansing, to the Obama announcement today. What are you thinking, Verge? How does it strike you? As well, Nancy, a lifeline and a short one at that?
Yeah, it's a short lifeline. I mean, look, we got a dose of tough love today from the president for an industry that we care dearly about, of course, here in Michigan and places like Lansing and all across the country. And I think he's got to talk like that, I guess, you know, to appease certain audiences. I would like to see the standard applied across the board. I mean, there was the specter of the bank executives at the White House. Sort of, I'm not going to say they were being wined and dined, but, you know, I didn't see a lot of heads rolling over there. And, you know, Rick Wagner's a good man, and he's led the restructuring at GM. And if you look at the cars that they're being made, that they're making today, like the Cadillac CTS, Motor Trend Car of the Year, the new Malibu, which is a phenomenal vehicle, you know, the G6. I mean, but it's a tougher environment. It's a competitive environment. So, if they want to put strings attached to the money, I mean, Wagner was working for a buck at this point. It was a big headache. So give the guy a break, I guess. And,
well, you know what, but Verge, I got to take issue with that about, I know that Governor Granholm and others have gotten out and said he's a sacrificial lamb in that. I don't, Verge, if you know this, but I ran for Congress in the 9th District on the issue of they needed to retool. And if we had to take the subsidies from the oil companies and put it into the retooling, fine. But there wasn't sort of this, you know, he's been at the head of that company for a long time. And, yes, lately the quality's gotten better and the Chevy Volt is in the pipeline. But we have to be honest. The leadership of the auto companies has been terrible for a long time. And so, you know, I think that I'm saying there is a double standard. I will agree with you on that. And those guys in New York, the Wall Street executives, should go too. But if they're going to have a restructuring of the auto industry, you do have to get in some new blood in there and people that realize the imperative to get to plug-in hybrids and to get there faster. You're going to need people that probably further down in the organization that are more dedicated to that goal than someone who's been presiding for. How long's Rick Wagner been there?
He's only been there 5 or 6 years. We could debate all day just that subject because the guy has brought a lot of change. Was it fast enough? We could debate about it. Well, you know, he's turning a big ship. And, you know, others would say that they weren't fast enough to get out of this country. And we've talked about that before, Nancy. You know, other companies have outsourced far more jobs. GM is a global company, but they kept some of their operations here. They kept Americans employed. A lot of other so-called American companies outsourced their entire production. So, you know, some on Wall Street would criticize him for that. So I'm sure there's many ways in which he didn't move fast enough. And I, too, you know, feel like they could have moved toward electric. But, you know, somebody made the point the other day that the government's approach to getting people into greener cars is akin to saying to the garment industry that the way to deal with the obesity problem, the best way would be to just make smaller clothes and only make the smaller clothes. I mean, you know, I'm not sure. People say, well, there's this demand, this pent-up demand. When gas prices go up, the demand for small cars goes up. But when gas prices are $2, people are comfortable with their SUVs. So I think they got to offer a variety of good cars.
I just had on a guest. Bill McKibben. He's a leading environmentalist in this country. He just told us a very stark fact that we are, scientists have told us, if we don't, the atmosphere will hold 350 parts per million of carbon. We're at 387. Everything, the planet is falling apart. So it's not, you know, the idea that, well, we want to make money in Detroit. I get that. I do, and I've been one of the fiercest advocates for this industry out there on cable TV as well. I know you've been out there and rucking it up, and that's great. But, you know, there's a point at which you have to take responsibility that it's not just about market forces, that there are other things. It's national security. There is the climate, the damage to the climate.
Well, I agree. And as long as the government is fair to everybody, and as you know, and we might agree, Nancy, on the issue that, you know, a lot of these companies who have outsourced and are really, they're exploiting the land and the people in other places where the environmental regulations aren't as strong. And then we buy the cheap goods from China or wherever, where the companies get away with murder and where the people don't enjoy human rights and everything else. So, I mean, that whole issue has to be applied beyond the auto industry. The idea of, and Jimmy Carter had that idea, I mean, have a human rights policy, a trade policy that reflects human rights. because as it is, the dollar, the almighty dollar is the deciding factor. That's why companies go overseas, because they can pollute, they can pay people dirt, and then we call it free trade. We call it, you know, somehow that's the market economy, and it's a race to the bottom. And the auto industry is part of that. So it's a very complex dynamic. And okay, so Wagoner's gone. I can live with it. I think he's a good man who tried hard. Maybe we can do better. I'm happy that the president, you know, a bunch of us mayors got together and we've been pushing on him. And I think part of that, part of getting the Ed Montgomery piece, getting Ed Montgomery to go after the redevelopment of these old sites, these closed sites, these potentially contaminated sites, is a great step forward as the auto industry contracts and right sizes. We're going to be left with a lot of sites, and communities need those that redevelopment effort. So that's some good news that came out of it. I think they're going to make this 60-day window. You know, Chrysler and Fiat, I guess, announced a merger today.
Yeah.
They have 30 days to do
talk
it,
about so. A shotgun marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, so the 60-day deadline, here's what I heard, different messages. I think we just had Mark Phelan on from the Detroit Free Press, and he said that the bondholders were really the recalcitrant ones. And so he was saying, listen, folks, I'm serious. If you don't take your hit, then we're going to put you into bankruptcy because
absolutely.
They've been holding out. But I don't know, given the climate for autos right now and the credit markets being frozen up, that you can get to viability in 60 days because of these circumstances outside the control of the industry.
Well, it depends on what is viability. You're exactly right. If viability means selling back up to selling 11 million vehicles, that's not going to happen. I mean, unless lightning strikes that we don't know about here with the economy. So my understanding is that that's not the necessary piece. It's not that sales have to be back up. That's unreasonable. But, you know, what does it mean exactly? What are the targets? I don't know exactly.
I think what we should do is say the targets are this, that we are going to, you know, I wrote an op-ed back in November about this, figure out how to salvage the best technology that's out there, whether it's electric or plug-in hybrid or fuel cell, from all three of them really should be participating, and then put taxpayer dollars behind that to, as quickly as possible, get those up to speed and up to production. And that's really, I think the public would get behind that, Verge. Then it's not just bailing out someone who's had a bad business model.
I agree. That sounds great to me. And I have called for an Apollo-style commitment to the cleaner, greener cars. I think that's exactly what you're talking about. You know, John F. Kennedy didn't say maybe we should think about putting a man on the moon. He said we will go to the moon. And I want that kind of a commitment toward exactly what you're talking about. We know people will be driving cars 5 and 10 years from now. The question is, what will those cars be like? We certainly hope and pray and want to make it happen that they will be cleaner, greener cars. We want to be making those in the United States for export to the world.
Now, some lawmakers, Verge, feel like there was a conference call last night with the president and a number of Michigan lawmakers and others from different states. And what I'm hearing from that, getting some feedback, is saying that they don't feel like this is enough time and enough money to make it happen. What sense do you have that it is or isn't?
Well, as far as the 60 days, if they were starting from ground zero, this is where it gets back to Wagoner. Because I believe that this company has been on a trajectory, granted not fast enough, granted not doing enough of the things, but because this company has been on a trajectory toward change and toward transition, if they were starting at ground zero, I'd say no way. I don't believe they are. I think you've got a lot of innovation there. I think you have some of the top minds in the industry there, many of them, in Detroit. And, you know, again, you go back to Kennedy's challenge. I mean, were we ready? Are you ever ready? You've got to set the bar high. And I think they've done that. And I think that if there's reasonable progress in that direction, then, look, Obama is not trying to set him up for failure.
No. In fact, I think it's central to his whole clean energy, green jobs agenda that they make a transition. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He came to Detroit. Remember, he came to Detroit, the Detroit Economic Club, and the council, and they were all upset and verklempt here because he said, you guys got to do better.
Yep, and he came to Lansing and gave his energy speech there and said that we want to make the cleaner, greener car. So I don't think he's trying to pull the rug out from underneath them. He is trying to, you know, kick them in the rear and get them motivated. He's got me motivated and encouraged. And also, you know, he's got the warranty protection, which gives people some sense of ease that they can buy a car today, even in this transition time, and know that that they're going to have a warranty, because that is a concern when people make a big investment like an automobile. And again, the appointment of a recovery redevelopment person, I think, is crucial for the auto cities that might be left behind during the contraction. So
you sound happy. You sound like this is, I'm reading you, Virge Bonero, mayor of Lansing, is a good day for you.
I believe it is, absolutely. I'm absolutely encouraged by it. You know, I don't believe he's pulling the rug out from underneath us. Just because they're not ready now doesn't mean they're not going to be ready 60 days from now. And again, as evidence, you've got Chrysler and Fiat. People said, oh, it'll never happen in 30 days. They announced the agreement on the same day the president gives his speech.
I love when that happens. Yeah, we can do it. We must do it. It must happen. Failure is not an option, folks.
You got it.
But if you live here, you sure know that when you look around.
We got to put the P back in GDP, gross domestic product. And by gosh, we make some darn good cars. We can make them better and we can make them greener, and it's an exciting future. But we ought to be doing that by putting Americans back to work and export these great cars to the world.
Amen. Virge, I want Virge, you need to be the auto czar. That's I'm going to start lobbying. Virge Bonero, auto czar. Mayor of Lansing, Virge Bonero. Good work seeing you on there.
Thanks
on TV. Thanks, Virge. Appreciate
Thanks,
it. All right.
Good to talk.
All right, you bet.
Take care.
Folks, I know I've said your call's next. I apologize. They are next. 866-991-9927. Lots going on today, as you would expect from a Detroit-based radio host who cares deeply about these issues. That's me on The Nancy Skinner Show.
While the steps I'm taking will have an impact on all Americans, some of our fellow citizens will be affected more than others. So I'd like to speak directly to all those men and women who work in the auto industry or live in countless communities that depend on it. Many of you have been going through tough times for longer than you care to remember. And I won't pretend that the tough times are over. I can't promise you there isn't more difficulty to come. But what I can promise you is this. I will fight for you. You're the reason I'm here today. I got my start fighting for working families in the shadows of a shuttered steel plant. I wake up every single day asking myself, what can I do to give you and working people all across this country a fair shot at the American dream?
Well, what do you think? How do you feel about what he came up with, the solution to the plan? I am not surprised, actually, that President Obama is essentially doing a restructure, a green restructure of the auto industry. Where have I heard that? It is Nancy Skinner on The Nancy Skinner Show. 866-991-9927, a lifeline, if you will, albeit a short one, 30 days for Chrysler, 60 days for GM, and a little bit of money, but some drastic changes have to be made. A lot of people are trying to, I guess, at the press briefing, say there's a double standard going on. What do you think about that? Do you think there really is? See, I think, knowing Obama, I'm thinking he's seeing this as an opportunity to do what couldn't be done with this industry without government intervention, and that is to green it, because they haven't done it on their own. And I don't think that Rick Wagner was a sacrificial lamb, in fact, as a lot of people from Michigan would say. I think that they need new leadership, and that this is an industry there where we have to roll up our hands and actually turn it around. Jack has been hanging on in San Diego this whole time. I'm so sorry, Jack, but I do appreciate you hanging on.
Oh, I enjoy listening to your show.
Oh, great, good.
Doesn't matter whether it's on the phone or the radio.
Well, we have a lot going on. I've got people calling in. I got CNN's calling me on the break. I'm talking to them. They want to get me on at 8 o'clock tonight to talk about
some of the unintended consequences here, because it appears to me that Obama's preparing the Chrysler and GM for bankruptcy. So that brings up a couple of problems. One is, as we know, that's the only way you can actually break these pension agreements, and the pensioners would probably be receiving about 25 cents on the dollar if they go bankrupt. But the other unintended consequence is this, Nancy. There are tens of billions of dollars of credit default swaps written on Chrysler and General Motors. And these are some of the most toxic derivatives, and until they're triggered, they remain off the books of our financial institutions. However, we don't know which institutions have exposure to credit default swaps on Chrysler and General Motors, and a bankruptcy would trigger credit default swaps. And you know what? That's just going to cause another taxpayer bailout, because those institutions that wrote these insurance policies are going to have to be bailed out all over again.
Well, we shall see. Jack, and thanks for hanging on there. I don't know that bankruptcy, I know he used the B word, but I think it was more to get the bondholders to do what they need to do than really to go there. But this discussion will continue, 866-991-9927. I'll tell you, it's weird being in Detroit right now. The pressure is on. I'll share that with you, too, when we come back on the Nancy Skinner Show.
What we're asking for is difficult. It will require hard choices by companies. It will require unions and workers who've already made extraordinarily painful concessions to do more. It'll require creditors to recognize that they can't hold out for the prospect of endless government bailouts. It will require efforts from a whole host of other stakeholders, including dealers and suppliers. Only then can we ask American taxpayers who've already put up so much of their hard-earned money to once more invest in a revitalized auto industry. But I'm confident that if each are willing to do their part, if all of us are doing our part, then this restructuring, as painful as it will be in the short term, will mark not an end, but a new beginning for a great American industry.
What say you, 866-991-9927? Short, painful restructuring? Well, if you lived here, the pain might feel a little more acute, but I agree with President Obama that the time has come to take this industry and to restructure it. In fact, I wrote an op-ed. We'll have to get this on the website, nancyskinnerlive.com. It was entitled, Yes, Detroit Can Make a Green Turnaround. That was my op-ed. I'll pull it up and read a little bit of it for you, Vicki, just so you should know. I think it is relevant. This was published November 20th of last year. And what I said is, look, there's a lot of great technology here. And given the circumstances, why don't we have a forced restructure of this industry that taps that technology? And you've got, essentially, I propose the following, that you get the technology people together, you get the financial people together, and you get the government economists together, because you have to have demand for the product, okay? So let's figure out where all the good technology is from the various three companies. At this point, this is before we knew it would only be GM and Chrysler involved in this, not Ford. Ford has its own. They're all have different technologies that they're pursuing. That's the problem. And they don't have the economies of scale. So start to collaborate where it makes sense. Shut down units where they don't make sense. Get the financial guy to figure out what kind of financing we need to get us from here to there. And get the economists to figure out what the incentive has to be so that Americans start buying these cars again. And that has to be part of it, because you won't be able to get from here to there, and then it would have been a waste of taxpayer dollars. This plan is starting, the more and more I dive into it, to sound like that. That, yes, we are restructuring an industry, and I heard my honey bunny on the way over here going, what's next? They're firing CEOs. And, in fact, program alert, I'm going to be debating a local foe of mine on national television, Nolan Finley of the Detroit News. Everyone's calling Rick Wagner a scapegoat. I'll be on CNN tonight on Campbell Brown's show at 8:10 tonight. So you can – I won't be on Fox. Are you happy about that? Is anyone happy that I'll be on a different network besides Fox News? I'll be on CNN tonight debating somebody about that. And I don't think he's a sacrificial lamb. They should have done it years ago. So now this crisis has presented an opportunity, perhaps. It's just a little – the timeline is so tight for me personally when you're living here and you know what the pain has been like. as the president pointed out, 1 in 10 people are unemployed here. We've been in recession for 8 years. 8 years, technically, in Michigan. So the news that you got 30 or 60 days, and then of course Chrysler just cut a deal, perhaps they'll be saved, but that is, it's an uneasy feeling. It feels like you know a hurricane is headed your way. If that's what you want to know, what it feels like, just driving around, I'm seeing, and when you drive around here in Detroit, it's almost all American vehicles. You don't have the same mix. And it's weird, it's eerie to hear, well, in 60 days, if you guys don't all come together, the cascade of events that could happen here, ground zero, it'll happen all over the country. The markets already are tanking. But it's unfathomable. That's the word, unfathomable. I can't say it, so it's not the word. 866-991-9927. Let's go to Los Angeles and get Jim into the conversation. Hi, Jim.
Oh, hi, Nancy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, I mean, Wagner was really somebody who I was really hoping would come out with an answer for us at some point that would say that he was going to move in new directions. But I think the thing that really hit me about his needing to go, in my opinion, was that there was a point during the debates in Congress where he went on Fox News during that period and said, you know, the problem isn't our cars. It's just that people aren't buying enough of them. All of our cars are the right kind of cars. And
yeah,
it really worried me at that point. And then during that same weekend, we happened to go to the L.A. car show, and General Motors had this huge display, and a lot of us were going to see what the new Volt was about because we're all on the waiting list looking forward to seeing it come out. And they had 5 Corvettes there and 4 of the new Camaros there and a chassis of the Volt kind of over in the corner. I was like, is this the direction we want to go? And I keep hoping that they're going to talk about it, but it seems like it seems to be going up and down and up and down. And now you've got companies like Tesla who are getting to release cars that are essentially in the same price range, and they're full electric. And so,
yeah, but see, here's the difference. I agree with you that the Volt is a great car, great technology. It took them a long time. They should have been on this path 20 years ago, okay?
Exactly.
You're talking to somebody, that's what I've been running on. I ran for Congress on it. It was so unpopular for me to say that at the time. But the Tesla thing, I looked into that as well. You know how that it's fully electric as well. It's $85,000, so it's not quite.
But the new one is only $59,000.
Well, it's not the idea of the second phase two, but there's no facility planned for it. It's not in production. It's not. And here's the thing: they had to string together 4,000 laptop batteries for this technology to work, the Roadster that you're talking about. 4,000 laptop batteries strung together is the way it is. So that is not a mass. Here's what you've got to understand, Jim: that is not a mass-produced vehicle, nor is it capable of that with that technology at this time. And I'm not one to say that it can't be, In my many discussions with executives here at the auto industries, because I have been talking to them, saying, "Well, why can't you do that?" They said, "Well, you know, to mass produce on the we're 11 million production units a year, you can't do that. They're barely delivering a couple of these Roadsters to some celebrities. That's great technology. Maybe we can learn from you and incorporate some of it, but they cannot mass produce that."
Yes, but they just announced the sedan, and they're going to be building them in Hawthorne, California. In the next 6 months, they're going to start production of them.
Not mass-producing them.
They're going to be making about, it's true, it's not millions, but it's like 20,000 cars a year, which is twice the target that they have for the Volt. And that car is coming out essentially at the same time.
Well, they've been behind on their promises of production to this point, and 20,000 vehicles, I mean, if the auto industry goes down, and they've been producing a combined 14 million, 20,000 ain't nothing, Jim. That's the problem.
Well,
so, I mean, I looked into that miracle, too, because how I care about the environment, and I always talk about the environment, but there's got to be some combination, and I think that this is a good. I think you and I aren't that far off here. I agree. Wagner should have been removed because he's been there 5 years, whatever. Some great, you know who should have led that company? What I said is when the first idea of an auto czar came up, when they should have been Al Gore. They should have had Al Gore or someone like that get there and say, okay, here's what we need to do. And we need to salvage the best technology, what you have in the pipeline, because they've all invested, like with Ballard in fuel cells, a Canadian fuel cell manufacturer. Some, you know, are on the plug-in hybrid. Some are on the electric vehicles. But they haven't done it as they needed to. So, you know, in the time frames and with the dollars, because they were making head over fist rolling in dough when they were selling their SUVs. The profit margin per vehicle was, you know, they were having an orgy of profits.
Mm-hmm.
And look what happened to them.
Yep.
So, you know, I agree. But you can't also, having said that, having been one of the fiercest critics of this industry, you cannot just let them go under, and there's a total double standard with Wall Street. This is the
I agree with that.
The
I mean,
heart of our manufacturing base is the auto. What do we make anymore if we don't have autos made in the United States?
Yeah, I want to give Geithner a chance, but his comments over the weekend about saying, "Oh, we can't break contracts," but they're telling the auto industry to change all their contracts to do what they're doing, but they can't break contracts on Wall Street.
Right.
That's a double standard if I've ever heard.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a real conservative.
It is. All right, thanks a lot, Jim.
You,
appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yep. In fact, Robert Gibbs was asked about that at the press briefing, and apparently some reporter I'm reading said his answer made no sense, that there is a double standard between what's happening in Detroit and what's happening in Wall Street as it regards the executives and CEOs. They're paying, think of that. Where's Rick Wagner's retention bonus? Why didn't Rick Wagner get didn't they have to pay AIG retention bonuses so the talent there, pool that could not be replaced, would not leave and go somewhere else, and then the auto industry CEO, GM gets fired? Oh, maybe that's a little bit of a, that might be a double standard. I'm going to take both of those. I'm going to say it is a double standard, but it was called for. It was time that this industry is central to our energy policy, to dealing with the climate issues, to all these other things. So my gut says that the Obama task force, they're digging in deeper than, you know, we believe right now to help them, to give them time. And they're telling these bondholders, that's what the bankruptcy talk is, I hope. Telling the bondholders, get with the program, dude, or we will do a prepackaged bankruptcy. And everyone here knows that's not going to work. No one's going to buy a car. Would you buy a car from a company in bankruptcy? I'll ask that question. Even if you knew you had a warranty, would that make a difference? Even if the government says, we will warranty your car, would you buy it if you knew that they were in bankruptcy? 866-991-9927. Because I don't think that really matters. I don't think people will. So I think this was more about putting the pressure on, the heat on, to get these bondholders to do what's right, and giving Detroit one last opportunity. High-stakes game of chicken is essentially what I think the Team Obama did today. I don't know if my home team is up to the challenge. That's the problem. 866-991-9927, the number of the program. Great. There's going to be a battle among locals on CNN tonight. Oh, this is going to be good for me. At home, on the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. I'll be on CNN tonight with Roland Martin. He's filling in for Campbell Brown on her show while she's on maternity leave, with Nolan Finley, who is the editor at the Detroit News. And it's so unpopular to say the things that I have here. About the auto industry needing to do better and greening the auto industry. And Nolan and I have fought locally on TV here in Detroit. So we're going to do it on national TV at 8 o'clock. That'll be fun. I'm going to have to suffer the consequences of that, I know for sure. The question is, this was a high-stakes decision by the administration. They gave Detroit a lifeline, but a very short one for everyone to get their act together. And part of the word, what I put out there, the question is, would you buy a car if it's in bankruptcy? Because the government is willing to now warranty a car, even if these companies have to go into bankruptcy to get the concessions out of the bondholders. That's the this is what's so crazy about it. It's the bondholders who are holding out. Yet the bondholders in Wall Street seem to have all gotten their money plus retention bonuses. So there is a double standard, yes, but there is a necessary, I believe that this restructure of this industry is necessary and all Americans should stand for it. 866-991-9927. Andy, in California, you would not buy a car from a company in bankruptcy?
No, I would. I would be worried about it. I know my wife definitely wouldn't buy a car in from coming bankruptcy. We recently had to get a car, and she wouldn't look at any of the American cars because of that reason.
Even the specter, the threat, some storm clouds gathering was enough for you not to buy an American car?
Absolutely. She would not even look at it. She was worried about it.
Well, did you talk to her, Andy? Did you say, like, that's crazy? Because it is crazy.
It is crazy, but, you know, people have their feelings. And what we did was something very different. We did our research, and we bought a Volkswagen Jetta TDI, which runs on diesel. And
yep.
That technology is right there on the shelf, and nobody's picking part of it.
It's still a carbon-based fuel. You know, it still runs on gasoline. Diesel fuel is a carbon-based fuel. So
yes,
if they are less polluting than in terms of the soot factor than they used to be, but it's still you aren't solving any greater green initiative.
Yes, we are because number one, it is greater gas mileage, it is cleaner. But what about biodiesel? That technology has been around for years and put on the shelves. What we're waiting for, and a lot of people, is for biodiesel, which is nothing more than refined oil. Refined vegetable oil or other waste products used in place of carbon-based fuel.
Well, that's happening in some places. You know, there's lots of arguments for and against that. Happening, obviously, in Brazil and, you know, where they have a different, they're using sugar cane and grow almost all ethanol from sugar cane, and they have almost replaced all their transportation fuels. I think we need to reach out further, that the ultimate, it's the hydrogen vehicle, the fuel cell is the vehicle of the future. But, you know, it takes a couple steps to get there. And why not make these cars here, Andy? See, this is what bothers me, and I do thank you for calling and being honest about that. But what bothers me is that, you know, we got to make things, folks. We cannot have this economy where everything is made in China and India and we don't make anything here because we're not advancing in technology. I said when I ran for office, we got to make stuff here faster than we ship it to China, okay? And so the fact that the auto industry was slow and lazy and, yes, getting profits from these big SUVs, I shamed them for that. But that doesn't mean you let them go bankrupt and have a cascade that's rupture through an economy that's already suffering. The answer is you pick yourself up and you find the best technology and you stand with it and you support your home team. That's what I think. Teresa in Anaheim, you would buy a car if it were in bankruptcy, given this warranty. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am.
The president's words meant something to you today?
Say it again.
The president, his announcement that they would warranty the car, is that essential for you to say you'd buy that car in bankruptcy?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is very essential. You're right. I mean, we Americans have to start buying our own products, like what I was saying earlier. We have to limit the products that are coming in here from other countries, because if we Americans are not going to help ourselves, who else would help us? If you want to buy product from China, maybe it's better for you to live in China rather than be here, or something from Mexico or somewhere else. I think we have to stand up as Americans to buy American products and help our economy growing, because we are the ones suffering. And if we don't stand up for ourselves, who will?
Right.
I believe that it's about time also that the government puts the money into the consumers. If you buy American products and there's a problem with it, then it must be backed up by the government, just like what they're planning right now, rather than giving it to those Wall Street people who are getting all the bonuses and driving the companies down the drain. They don't have any interest in getting the companies in good spending because they're going to get their bonuses anyways.
To be retained, right? It's pretty crazy to think through, isn't it, Teresa?
It is. I mean, even the housing economy. Why the president says we have to bail out all those people who are not unscrupulous. Anybody who purchases a house that they cannot afford are unscrupulous. Because they knew they could not afford it.
No, well, that's not necessarily true. You know, the people just didn't read the fine print. The reason he said is we had to bail them out is because we got to stop the downward spiral in housing prices. And the analogy to be made here is that we have to bail out this auto industry, bail them out. These are loans so that our economy doesn't go down with it. That's the very, very short story here. All right, and our climate, okay? More on the world and the international connection coming up and all this stuff on the Nancy Skinner Show. In trouble now, and I'm going to cause a little more trouble tonight. Apparently at 8 o'clock, correction, I stand correction, on CNN, on the Campbell Brown Show with Roland Martin, guest hosting, and Nolan Finley, who is the editor of the Detroit News. He's all mad. He's written this op-ed that somehow Rick Wagner, poor Rick Wagner, it has more to do with politics than his ability to revive GM. He says, well, at least we now know who's running General Motors, the Obama White House. In an extraordinary expansion of the government's reach, Sunday demanded and got the head of Rick Wagner. In doing so, the president brushed aside GM's board of directors selected by shareholders and entrusted with the power to hire and fire executives and assumed that role for himself. He goes on and on and on to say that this is essentially, you know, a heavy-handed act of government for the Obama team to have required the dismissal of Rick Wagner. I would disagree. I think these guys have been slow in coming, and they should have been on this technology much faster. I think there is a double standard with Wall Street. I do. There was not a lot of heads rolling over there. But in this particular industry, we need a restructure, and we need it quickly. Trust me on that. And trust Bill Holstein. Bill Holstein is the author of why GM matters. So if you don't believe me, perhaps you believe Bill Holstein about why GM matters, because he's written a book on it. WilliamHolstein.com is his website, and he joins us now. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Well,
to answer your question, mm-hmm. They have been involved in a restructuring for many years. I mean, they've been working really hard to...
For many years. Yeah, that's the problem. For many years, a restructuring. Without the urgency, Bill, I don't know how much you know about me, but I live in Detroit. I'm from Detroit. The restructuring was, how do we say this? It was not on the time scale it should have been. In other words, there's another word.
Well, I think put it in this way: if Rick Wagner had come in the year 2001 or 2002, and said, "I'm going to cut the unionized workforce in half. I'm going to close 10 or 12 factories. I'm going to get rid of these two or three brands, and I'm going to do it all now, today," what would people have said? People have said, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. There's no reason to do that. So he's been working these years to try to transform General Motors and try to preserve brands, preserve factories, preserve jobs. But in the final analysis, it wasn't possible. So
What was missing from the equation of that, preserving all those things? I mean, there has to be, when you are a chief executive officer, like the President of the United States, you have to look on that horizon and say, you know what, we are going to hit this wall called oil and gas prices. And at some point, there's going to be, with peak oil theory now having been firmly established, we are going to see our market completely drop in cars. And I would have invested so much more in R&D and so much more in bringing that product, even the Chevy Volt. And I'm a big cheerleader for this particular product, and have been out there on all the cable networks saying that you cannot just let this company die because of the technology in the pipeline. But even that, even when it came out last year, you know, there was an urgency. There was never any urgency to the transformation of this industry from SUVs, where they made a lot per unit, to something that was going to be ready to meet the perfect storm of the future.
Well,
a storm that everybody knew was coming.
Well, I agree with you that they were slower than I would like for them to have been with the Volt. I wish the Volt was out right now. I wish that they were out with their 8 hybrid models sooner than they were out. But you have to ask yourself, what are the American people buying? And so some liberals in Washington think, and some pro-environmental factors think that, well, we can force General Motors to make certain cars that are environmentally friendly and push them out there, and that's all it takes. But American people have the freedom to buy the cars they want. And if you force General Motors to introduce cars that Americans don't want, it's a disaster in terms of how private enterprise works. So General Motors...
But Bill, the idea that you're forcing them to buy... People don't care what technology. When Al Gore said that there would be no combustion engine in the future, he was ridiculed. But he was right. Now these same executives are saying, okay, we got to look at, you know, fuel cell vehicles, plug-in hybrids, all these different models. People don't really care that it is a fossil fuel-based combustion engine that fuels their vehicle. What they want is something that is sleek, sexy, gets them where they want to go, and they don't have to pay $4 a gallon gas.
And they want it to be affordable. They want it to be as cheap as possible, don't they?
Yeah.
So guess what? Trumps their environmental sensibility is they want cars at a good price. They're not willing to pay a premium for environmentally.
But they paid for SUVs. They bought Hummers. I mean, you know, I think that the whole argument that you're missing here, where we're crossing paths, I should say, Bill, is that you are assuming that you cannot have a car that is energy efficient at a price point and a size point, a model that all come together and meet consumer demand. And I would just completely disagree with that. It's just no one's had the vision to be able to put all those factors together.
What were the profit? They're losing money in the Prius too, so nobody has done it yet.
What's the profit margin on an Explorer, say, or?
Well, those bigger vehicles have had $10,000 profit margins, but I mean, even Prius, the Toyota, nobody believes that they're making money on that. They're subsidizing that. So, I mean, there is a noble goal here of working to have the United States be less dependent on foreign energy, to have less pollution coming out of our vehicles, to have vehicles that are available, that are smaller, that are more efficient. But you can't dictate that.
Well, it's not noble. It's not a noble goal. If we are buying our oil, Bill, from tyrants who are killing us, at one point when it was $140 a barrel, that was something like, at McCain, I'll grant him this, was right, sending $700 billion in petrodollars over to hostile nations. That's not a noble thing. When the climate is, as I just had a leading environmentalist on the show, the scientists say the maximum carbon we can absorb is 350 million parts per million, and we're at 387, and the ice caps are melting, and it's already causing... That's not called noble. That's when you need leaders to say, you know what, folks, this is a national security issue. This is our economy. They're going to choke us. The lifeblood of our economy is going to be choked off. We're sending oil over, our dollars over to people to finance terrorism.
Guess who's leading the charge? Guess who's leading the charge toward lithium-ion battery?
The Chinese.
No, in the United States, it's General Motors.
Oh, well, no, I know that. No, but there's a battery war. Korea is actually sort of winning right now.
Well, and Korea, Japan, China, European. So if the Americans are going to have a piece of the lithium-ion battery industry, which could be $150 billion a year industry globally, if we're, as this is the classic case of a green industry, if we're going to have a piece of that, we need General Motors to make the Chevy Volt successful. So
I agree about that.
When it comes to lithium ion,
we agree with that. That's why it's better than a Prius, because they're not there yet, although they're going to go to that technology. So, Bill, what did you like about? I mean, I think that that's what the Obama team is going to do. Is that they're going to say, they have said, we cannot change. We cannot, like, end our dependence on oil and then be dependent on batteries. We need to develop those technologies here. What is it you don't like about that?
Well, I don't think that the Obama administration should say to General Motors, all right, we're in the driver's seat now, and we want you to make 500,000 Chevy Volts and introduce it at a certain cost point by such and such a time frame. There should be any kind of effort like that to dictate what models General Motors introduces with what features will be a disaster. Because it depends on the American marketplace. People have to want to buy these vehicles at the price points that the company offers them at. And if people in Washington believe they have the power to dictate that, then we're in real trouble.
But do we have the responsibility as taxpayers to finance an industry that is so foolhardy in its and I live in Detroit, okay? So I'm at, where do you live, Bill?
New York.
Okay, I live here. So we've been in recession for 8 years. So this is, I'm putting my money where my mouth is here. The idea of just give them what they want has not resulted in the financial and economic success for this industry that you are somehow imagining. It's been a disaster because their market share has fallen off drastically, and now they're going to the federal government hat in hand asking for a bailout. Why shouldn't the government say, look, on one hand, we have these national security objectives, we have these climate objectives. If you want loans, you know, you have the technology in the pipeline. I am the last one to suggest that they should allow them to fail, because I think that'll be catastrophic for the economy. But why not put some...
right way to do this is to work through the Department of Energy and the Advanced Battery Consortium to try to identify the key technologies and to help develop those technologies, develop them in the supplier base, to prove the validity of the technologies, and then to let the private sector
choose. We did that with the Clinton administration, the Generation for a New Advancement of New Vehicles, that whole program. It was all voluntary. All the big three were involved. They cherry-picked what they wanted. They didn't really move further on it. It was just, it wasn't, they had no teeth. Nothing happened.
Well, I think that's the right way to do it, and maybe it needs to be accelerated. It needs more money. It needs better leadership. But the wrong way to do it is to dictate to General Motors to say, we're lending you money, now you introduce these products. That has the recipe for being a disaster in terms of wasting resources and building cars that people don't want.
All right, well, you and I agree that GM does matter. How's that?
Right.
Let's agree on that.
Right,
GM does matter. Why? That's his book, Bill Holstein, Why GM Matters. WilliamHolstein.com is his website. We'll leave it at that, Bill, okay?
Right. Thank you.
We just think that it's got to be different directions, perhaps, is where we have to go with it. Because GM won't exist in the model of this author. It would be defunct. 866-991-9927. Time for Plan B, essentially. That's what I've been advocating for a long, long time. And it might have come just in time. Let's hope. Let's hope for everyone, not just for Detroit, but for everyone. All right, more of your calls next. And help me. We'll fight this fight out about Rick Wagner, too, on CNN tonight. On The Nancy Skinner Show.
Winning this race. One must we do this to one another. We are just passionate love.
866-991-9927. I guess I just had a disagreement with our guest, Bill Holstein, YGM Matters. A lot of people feel like this is unfair for the government to dictate to the auto industry why it is they should make more fuel-efficient vehicles, even though that's the reason that they had their demise, is because they weren't fast enough on development of technology, and now they want taxpayer dollars. I think that's fair. I think that's what should have happened a long time ago. Let's see what Joel thinks in Los Angeles. Hi, Joel. Hello, Joel.
I'm in Los Angeles.
There you are. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
hi, Joel.
That's okay. Well, first of all, GM, Ford, and Chrysler all make diesel-powered cars that they sell everywhere in the world except the United States. And the simple solution is take the infrastructure that you already have, which is being able to buy diesel fuel at a gas station, and being able to buy biodiesel fuel, which is available. I'm sitting here going through my records last year, and all the fuel that I bought for my diesel pickup truck was biodiesel fuel. It's a clean fuel. It's cleaner than the diesel they sell right now. And the technology is here. I have a 2001 Dodge pickup, and I run it all the time on biodiesel fuel. I didn't have to convert it. I didn't have to do anything. So if they want a quick solution, bring the cars that they sell everywhere in the world. Bring them here. It's very simple.
Well, many of the right now, I think a percentage of their mix is already what they call flex fuel vehicles that can use. That's not biodiesel. I know that's ethanol.
Ethanol doesn't give you the range. I mean, I have a diesel Volkswagen Beetle that gets 40 miles to the gallon. No.
Well, that is the Chrysler solution, Joel. That they are going to. That's the Chrysler's going to partner with Fiat to bring that technology. That is the solution for Chrysler. It's not that, you know, they have different, they're making different vehicles all over the world in different types. And that's part of the problem. Why haven't they made them here? If they're capable of making them, why haven't they made them here? Patrick. Hi, Patrick, in California. You're on with Nancy Skinner. Patrick, hello. Hello, you there? Oh, it's Rick. I'm sorry. I'm missing a PAT. Hi, Rick. You're on with Nancy Skinner.
Hi, Nancy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Oh,
a little crazy today.
To talk with you.
But
yeah, well, I was prompted to call because of your last caller or the gentleman that you had on. And I was so disappointed listening to this guy because he just didn't get it. And although you were giving the points and trying to explain to him, he still wasn't understanding. And didn't have the solution.
And he wrote a book, too, Why GM Matters.
Yeah, I couldn't understand this guy, you know, and he wants to keep giving them money, and he didn't have an answer for you of what's going to come of it. It just blew me away, and I had to call.
That's the problem with so-called experts. They're so-called.
Yeah. If I could take a moment to share an experience, and it explains the problem with the financial part of this whole thing.
Well, you know what? Yeah. I'm right up against a hard break. Will you hold on, and then I'll let you share it on the other side?
Yes.
Okay, great. Hold on, because one of those we call the hard break in radio.
Okay.
Okay, great. But hang on, Rick. 866-991-9927 on this whole thing, the government dictating. This should have happened a long time ago, folks. It's just finally happening. Well, one more segment on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Well, I mean-
Oh, is that what you want, John? You want me to be on the air? Okay, then I'll do that. He's waving at me. The air? The radio? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just talking to the producers over at CNN, asking my opinion. You'll be able to hear it, see it, actually, on CNN. Are you happy about that? I'm not on Fox at 8 o'clock tonight, debating whether this is a double standard for the administration to be so involved in the auto restructure and not in Wall Street. That's what we'll be debating tonight on CNN. 866-991-9927. We had Rick holding. Let's see. Rick held through the break. And
I'm here.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for holding. You had an example you wanted to illustrate.
Yeah, I just want to tell you, here in the L.A. area, we had a news item that was showing where there are cars all over various parts of Southern California. Brand new cars are just being stored wherever they can store them. And so I'm sitting thinking, watching this, and I said, well, why can't we do something about the credit system, you know, to get more people into the newer cars?
Mm-hmm.
So I was fortunate to talk with a council member of Los Angeles, and I asked the question. I said, wouldn't it be easier to have the credit agencies lower their standards for people that are currently working and allow them to get into a new car, notably American cars? And the guy laughed at me. He said it would never work. He says it's a crazy idea, and it's something to not even think about.
No, it's okay that we allow the Chinese to fund our entire debt, and now we are all vulnerable to the point of economic collapse. But it's crazy to think about trying to incentivize the financing of an American vehicle so that we are self-sufficient. That's insane, Rick.
Yeah. No one's entertaining the idea. I don't get it.
Well, that's the problem. That is the problem. That's what, if you read my, go Google my article. I'll put it on the website, but it's, yes, Detroit can make a green turnaround. And what I said there is there's three components. There's the technology, but there's also the financing, and there has to be a new incentive for people to buy the cars as well. I mean, there's supply and demand, and so hopefully when we come out of the other end, if we come out of the other end of this, there will, in fact, be an incentive for people to go out and buy these cars in serious numbers. Yes, buy American cars. What's so crazy about that? We, the taxpayers, who are lending them money to achieve these goals, actually helping finance that. It, to me, it makes kind of perfect sense. Denise in Minneapolis, what do you think?
Hello, Nancy. You know, I just wanted to tell you we miss you out here. We did have you on Air America, I think, for a little while. Or on XM, I think I got you on XM. So
yeah.
I'm sorry you're not on the air. So I'm listening to you online.
All right.
But I wanted to just say that I really think one of the big things that we're missing here is the reason why the American companies don't sell, if they made the cars, if they advertise them, people would probably buy them. What I notice on television here, at least every market, they've got plenty of money to spend on advertising, but what are they advertising? Monster trucks, SUVs, you know, these huge vehicles that are gas guzzlers. So that's one of the big problems I think
right.
they have. And another thing I think that they have, too, is I lived in Michigan and drove an American car. My very first new car was an American car. I lived and worked in Flint, Michigan. And my car got 160,000 miles on it. But that was quite a while ago. And I don't know whether they build cars like that anymore. And I think a lot of people think they don't. And I think what the deal is, I think what a lot of people is, you know, even though people can afford to buy a car every 4 or 5 years, they don't want to have to do it every 4 or 5 years. Okay? And people who buy American cars that I know have been disappointed with that, and so they've gone to Hondas and Toyotas because they want to be able to drive a car for 10 years.
Well, but the quality of the cars, there's a lot of misinformation there because the quality of cars has gotten a lot better.
Go online and look at VX.com and see if you can find a car that's 10 years old that's American made. I mean, it's impossible. You can find cars that are still on the road that are Toyotas and Hondas that are, you know,
well, but that's
15 years old and they're still going.
I know, but you're talking to Denise 10 years ago.
No, I'm talking now.
I know, but you wanted me to find a car built 10 years ago that's available today.
Yeah,
that means it was built 10 years ago. Because it was 10 years ago. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm saying, but nobody can afford it. If the salaries haven't gone up, how do you expect people to buy cars that cost what they cost and not know that the car's going to last more than 5 years?
Well, that's why I'm concerned about the whole bankruptcy option, because
if you can guarantee your car is going to be on the road as long as a Honda or a Toyota, then people will buy an American car.
Well, that, I think those guarantees can be made. The top J.D. Powers quality survey, it ranks these cars now.
I think they rank is the Cadillac.
That's number one. But I think the top three out of four are American.
You got to somehow find a way to marry the two. You got to get low gas, you got to get high gas mileage, and you got to get longevity. You got to be able to marry the two. And I just think that we're missing that. We're missing that. I love Michigan.
But we don't know. It's like, Denise, what you're saying is that we have to have a car that lasts 10 years. 10 years ago, we weren't making those cars. We are now. Come back and talk to me. Hopefully, I'm still not doing this show in 10 years. But
these cars are making them. No, listen. No, you're missing the point. I'm not saying they're not making them now. You might be right. Okay, yeah. Okay, they're not making them now. But that's what they've got to do. That's where they're missing the boat. They are missing the boat there. I mean, and people, it's hard to get people to turn back and buy something else when they have been told, you know, when they've been taught, you know what, if you
that
car,
I agree, I agree.
Somebody who only makes an, you know, if you're somebody who doesn't make $1 million a year, you can only afford to buy a car once every 10 years instead of 5 years. What are you going to take your chances on? And that's, even though it may not be true today, it feels like it probably might be.
I got a bunch of other people I got to get in here, Denise, but I completely agree with you on that, that it's hard to get a second chance. Yeah, at this game, because these are long-term commitments. That is the same reason why you can't go into bankruptcy, because they're long-term commitments, and people are not going to make them lightheartedly. But what I'm saying, and I think that I find myself debating both sides here. The advertising has been terrible on these cars. The messaging, and just in terms of framing and messaging, like we talk about in politics, from the U.S. automakers has been terrible compared to the reality of progress that they have been making. But it's not been fast enough. That's my point. 866-991-9927. Let's go to Dan is in Rochester, New York. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Nancy. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I'm okay.
Good.
We'll see. We'll see if we can get this done in a month or 2 months. Otherwise, I live, all housing prices, I'm telling you, are going to drop quick. You can come and live in Detroit cheap.
I hope it's a lot sooner than that, because, you know, I living in Rochester, working in Buffalo, I've actually got a lot of exposure to GM. We've got a couple of powertrain plants and stamping plants here, plus Delphi out of Rochester. Now, my concern is kind of touching on what your last caller was talking about as far as being able to afford these cars. You know, I'm excited about this Chevy Volt coming out, 100 miles per gallon, you know, all the technologies that are in it, but they're going to kill it with the standard options. They're going to put leather interior in it, which is going to cost an extra how many dollars. They're going to give it, you know, 17-inch alloy wheels when it only needs a 15-inch wheel. And, you know, why can't we just get back to individual options? I don't want leather interior. I got a small dog who's going to scratch it all to, you know what?
Well, I think the only reason that that might be is because if the mass production angle, and I don't know that to be the case for sure, but I would think when you have a lot of options on things, then you have, see, that's part of the problem. You don't have the economies of scale. They had too many models of cars to begin with and too many different options. So maybe that's it. But otherwise, I agree with you. You should have the choice of what you want.
Right, yeah, Scion has made a pretty good advance toward that. I mean, you walk into a Scion dealership, which is nothing more than a low-end Toyota, and you get to choose everything, even down to the stereo.
Well, that should be, you know what, I think that should be doable with the just-in-time manufacturing system. You know, that's what it is. I want this mix of options, and then that car is produced.
Right. In the years past, people have wanted a car that they could walk into a dealership, buy it, and drive away in it the same day. Now we're coming into a new era where people are going to be a lot more frugal. They're going to be a lot more conscious of what they're spending it on. Maybe they can save $2,000 or $3,000 getting rid of a couple of options, and GM can sell more cars.
I think that's a great solution. Yeah, I do. And you might not have the variety on the lot the day you walk in, but that's been part of the problem because you have the overhead that goes with that. And
If I can save $2,000 or $3,000, I'll wait 2 or 3 weeks to get my car.
I should hope so. I should hope so. That's a lot of money. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call.
Thanks,
all right, you bet. 866-991-9927. Are you gonna save the auto industry and consider buying an American car in the next 60 days? Renee in Los Angeles. Hi, Renee. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Irene. Hi, Irene. Irene? Let's see. Yep. Irene is not there. Let's go to, we'll go up to Phoenix and get Jim into the program. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nancy.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Great show. I wanted to comment, and I agree with you that the hydrogen is, you know, the goal that we should be going after. What's interesting is that I think...
I'm here. Go ahead. Nope, you dropped off. We're having some technical problems on the program, I think. Why don't we take a break and we'll fix this and come back and get a couple more of your calls in. 866-991-9927. We'll get you back on if you got dropped off. We still have another segment before we wrap up this edition. I'm sure it's not going away. Don't you feel? I feel like that polar bear. You know the picture of the polar bear on the one little... like ice, what do you call those things? Glaciers. And, you know, it's out stranded and it's melting. That's what it feels like to be in Detroit right now. We're like the polar bear on that little glacier. And it's shrinking. And it's getting kind of scary, actually. can you swim? You better learn how to swim quick. Help us, people. Buy some American cars. 866-991-9927. The number of the program. One more segment on the Nancy Skinner Show. Folks. For the last segment of the Nancy Skinner Show, a lot of people want to get their 2 cents in on the whole auto situation. I feel like reporting live from Ghost Town. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. So let's. I'm going to blow through your calls. If everyone can kind of be quick, then we can get everybody in on it because I think everybody's got an opinion when it comes to this one. Irene is up first. There she is. Hi, Irene.
Hi. Obama explained previously in a TV interview. He said years ago as to why he's hard on the auto companies and not AIG. He said years ago when the savings and loan debacle happened, we set in place structures to prevent future problems, and we don't have that structure now. We have to create it, which is why he cannot do things after the fact. They have to put in new controls. Now, I watched Obama say that on television.
Right. Well, what he's talking about is the authority with the non-bank facilities like we have with banks, the ability to go in and sort of force that change. And we don't have that with non-banks. He's
and
correct
he's putting
about
that. Putting that in now.
Right.
And but savings and loans had the structure made put in into effect years ago, and that's what he's going to do now, put it into effect right. For the banks and financial in entities.
That is correct. His critics would say, well, you know, the auto industry is they're doing with the auto industry what they cannot do with those banks. But the difference is that is it a systemic risk? That's the difference they're saying. That the auto companies, we could just let them go, and it would be sad, but it's not a systemic risk to the economy, whereas they feel that they're being held hostage when it comes to companies like AIG and all these other companies. Richie is up next. Hi, Richie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Okay, I just want to reply to Denise earlier, the previous caller, and that she was saying that American cars are not that good, but my plumber drives the 1959 F-150, and he's still driving it.
Yeah, the F-150s, built tough. The best-selling car there is. You know, a lot of people don't even realize when they talk about the people who love to just Detroit, they still have American U.S. automakers still have 50% of the market share. In what business does an American company own 50% of all the market share there is? I don't know of any other business in this world where you've got all this global competition. So they still, yeah, they used to, because they didn't used to have competitors. They still make 50% of all cars. Hello?
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. You know, no one ever brings that up. Oh, yeah, that. They're making 50% of the cars in Missouri, Raymore, Missouri. Jay is up next. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Nancy. Hey, I just want to call. Right before your last break, you mentioned that, please buy American cars. I get so frustrated when I see commercials on TV where they talk about these wonderful rates for cars. I got laid off in 2000 and have, had to work my way back. I'm paying almost $400 a month for a car that anybody else can drive around for $200 a month. If we get these cars that are on the lot in L.A., like that last caller said, to people like me, I'd love to buy it.
So it's just the financing.
Well, yeah, financing, but, it seems like, in any financing situation, people that have had problems in the past are the ones that are punished the most.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're saying you can keep the payment. You'd be happy to help buy up some of this inventory if there was a assistance program that allowed you to get the car, that financed and sort of overridden.
Not even an assistance program. I mean, heck, a realistic program. I mean, I'm paying almost $400 a month now. I'd love to pay, $300 a month for a new car.
And if it were an American car, then that's a great deal.
I only buy American. So.
Well, there you go. Okay, well, I agree with you. The credit market has completely dried up. See, this is, Detroit's, when they argue about this, they are correct in that. No one is buying cars. You can't, it's hard to get a car loan, no matter what your credit status is. Even if you have decent credit, it's hard. Justin is in Los Angeles. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Nancy. I just wanted to make a comment about the auto industry. I go to Cal State Long Beach in L.A.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm part of the industrial design program. And the thing about these industrial design programs is that, for example, we have Art Center in Los Angeles and we have CCS in Detroit. And they're private schools and they don't seem to work with engineering as much in terms of cross-discipline during schools. Schooling when people are in school. So what I wanted to say is that sorry, I'm kind of nervous.
No, it's okay. It's just me. So you're talking about that you feel like that you're not being taught the right technology. So if you're going to they should be teaching it in schools, right?
Well, no. The point that I wanted to make is that, for example, right now I'm just doing my homework and I'm looking at some new technology on the internet. And I
okay, what technology? Because I don't have a whole lot of time. What are you talking about? Well, you like hydrogen, you like fuel cells. What do you like? And you're not learning it in school?
Okay, no. The big thing is that with the auto industry, for example, if you look at the Chevy Volt and its evolution from the concept
yes.
to the actual model, a lot of changes were made that might not be favorable to buyers. And I think as designers, we have to work more with engineers and say, for example, okay, well, if we're going to streamline these cars, we have to establish that. And then we have to work around that. And then we can embrace it, create a new form language for these cars, and that might be more appealing to buyers.
I think you're talking a lot of jargon, I should say, there about that. But you're correct. Are you saying that you got to make – this is what I'm hearing from everybody for the whole show. We got to make cars that people want to buy because they're sexy, okay? They got to be fuel efficient. They got to be affordable. And we have to do it because our country needs the jobs, the green jobs, and we have to protect our climate. And we have to increase our national security. That's what I heard today. That's exactly what I'm going to get on CNN and say 8 o'clock tonight. And then you can tell me how I did tomorrow, okay? I'll do my best. And we'll be back tomorrow on the Nancy Skinner Show.